Good morning, honorable members, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. I see the head of the DG, the staff, support staff to the committee, and everyone present in this meeting. We are dealing with a very hectic but reasonable program today. One, it will be a briefing by the department on their second, third, and fourth quarterly performance reports. The second one will be a legislative program, and then it will be the fourth term program that we will have to look at, and then the adoption of the report on the Independent Electricity Management Bill, and then we will hopefully resolve to attend the meeting. I must say, though, honorable members, this is obvious, actually, the last meeting that we will have, and you will see there, until we meet again, probably in August, as per the program of Parliament. No, not August, October, as per the program of Parliament. And therefore, we may not have time of a comeback on any matter that we think we can leave hanging, except that it will have to wait until October. Hopefully it will fit on the program, although I am very doubtful. Please, honorable members, in advance, I know that when we deal with issues, we are not ordinary individuals. We are people who have been given mandates by our own constituencies. And that therefore says all of us who are here, we've got a political mandate. But as we do so, I must appeal, especially from the chair in advance, that we must do that with absolutely and ultimate respect for each other, but also with ultimate respect for the rules of Parliament. We are all here for a certain purpose, and I must repeat what I said yesterday. The mere fact that we've got difference of views and opinion, the mere fact that we've got to engage in serious discussions, I respect each and every member of this committee as a member of the committee, because that person is here for a specific purpose. I therefore appeal to every member that same, I'm expecting that I be respected as a chairperson of this committee. And there are procedures to follow if there is a dissatisfaction in the manner that the chairperson probably is conducting himself. But when a chairperson has made a ruling, we cannot go back or have a dialogue on a matter that has been ruled on. Happy or not happy, there are decisions that will be taken by this committee. Even myself as a chairperson, I may not be happy with, but I will have to respect the fact that that decision is taken. It doesn't have to be a decision that satisfied me. If I'm not happy, I then have a recourse as a member of parliament on what then I have to do. So I request that in whatever we do, let's at least show courtesy of respecting one another, including myself as a chairperson. Having said so, let me go. Honorable Langa, please accept my apology. I made a mistake yesterday. I did receive the notice that now you are representing your party, which is the EFF, as an alternate. I should have welcomed you yesterday. Welcome to the committee, and hopefully we will make your own very productive and fruitful contribution in order to assist us to take forward the task at hand. So you are welcome to the committee, and farewell to Honorable Mtenjane, but he is still part of the parliamentary team. On that note, can I check, are there any apologies?
Good morning, members and our guests. Chair, we've got apology from Mr. Zungula, and from the department side, we've got apology from the minister. Thank you.
Okay, in the absence of another apologies, can we then go to DG? You welcome with your team.
Chairperson.
Is there a voice?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just want to make an apology for Honorable Malinga, who may be in the platform as we speak, but has indicated that she's in and out because of load shedding.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mika. Honorable members, you'll bear with me. The level of wind outside here, it's so hectic. So if I don't get to hear you, it is because it's so windy outside. Can we go to the department? DG, you don't have all the time, please. Let's deal with the first matter, which is your second, third, and fourth quarterly reports. The time now, you can't do this thing more than leave the time that you might have there. It's not yours. The time now is almost 10 past. Quarter two, you must be done. Continue, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, Chair, and also good morning to the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy, the Deputy Directors General that are also in attendance, and Chief Directors, our support staff from the committee and also ministry, and the officials from the department that are in attendance, our media, and also our public at large. Chair, we are really pleased that we are appearing before the committee. I must actually highlight, Chair, that maybe, you know, you might be surprised with my voice, and so I'd like to apologize for the unpalatable voice. I've got a bit of a flu, and so from time to time I'm sure I'll be coughing, but I'll try to be quicker. Chair, without trying to be politically correct, let me also welcome our new member who is not new in Parliament, Honorable Langa. Chair, the presentation, as we have indicated, we will cover quarter two, three, and four of our performance information and financials. And I must also indicate that we have two separate presentations for the former DOE and DMR, because we're still using the different budget votes. That is why our information will be presented separately, just to give that a bit of a sense. And also, Chair, we have 104 slides in total. We are not going to present all the slides. Those are annexures for information for honorable members. We would only deal with slides 1 up until 33, And annexes A and B will just be for your information. We have Mr. Mlauzi, who is the head of strategy and risk management, who will take us through the performance information, and the CFO will be, you know, taking members through, honorable members through the financials. And we also have the DDGs responsible for different branches. Then they will be able to assist in responding to the questions after the presentation has been delivered. I would like to take this opportunity, with your indulgence, Chair, be mindful of the time, now to hand over to Mr. Mlauzi to take us through the presentation. Over to you, Mr. Mlauzi.
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Portfolio Committee members, the Minister in absentia, DDGs and other colleagues present. As the DG has indicated, Chair and members, I will go right away to slide number two. Slide number two is reflected on the screen, and it talks about the introduction, comparative performance, as well as performance.
Even if the slide is bonagala kancane, say that when you have muted your mic, please mute your mic. Please continue, Laos.
Thank you, Chair. The outline speaks about those five issues there, which is introduction, comparative performance for both departments, and the highlights for both departments will be presented. As DG has indicated, the detailed information in terms of our implementation of the APPs for Q2 to Q4 are contained in annexures A and B. Can we go to slide number three? Slide number three. Thank you very much. As you know, Chair, is that the department was merged, put together into one department effective from May 2019 to become DMRE. However, this information is providing a report on the performance of both departments for Q2 to Q4. This is simply because, as DG has indicated, that before 1st of April, we were operating on two budget votes. But now, since 1st of April 2020, we are now vote number 34, which is one DMRE budget vote. Next slide, please. Now, Chair, you will see that prior to the measure, the DOE comprised of six programs. The names of those programs are reflected over there. That's Administration, Energy Policy and Planning, Petroleum and Petroleum Products Regulation, Electrification and Programs and Projects, Nuclear Energy and Clean Energy. That is for the former DOE. Next slide. On the side of DMR, we previously had four programs, which is Administration, Mine Health and Safety, Mineral Regulation, Mineral Policy and Promotion. Next slide. Now, as the two departments, we do have the entities that are assisting us in implementing our plans, and they would have contributed a lot in terms of the program performance information that we'll be presenting to your kind selves. Next slide. This, Chairperson, is a comparative performance for DOE. As we go on, you'll see same with regards to the former DMR. Now, you see those green, yellow, and red colors per program. And if you look at the columns at the top, you'll see it says the name of the branches. As you go down, you can see the names of the branches. Now, we are reporting here for Q2, Q3, and Q4. So, cumulatively, when you look into the first branch of the former DOE, you'll see policy and planning. Now, you will see that policy and planning for Q2, if you look at the top, you'll see it says Q2 three times. They would have achieved one target, partially achieved zero, and not achieved five. That is policy. For Q3, they would achieve one target, partially achieved zero, and not achieved seven. But I must say, Chairperson, in order to get the actual numbers of how many targets were there per quota, you do the addition. In other words, you add the numbers. So, for example, for Q2, you can see that they achieved one, they partially achieved zero, they did not achieve seven. So when you put those numbers together, you get eight, meaning they had eight targets. Then for Q4 on policy and planning, they achieved two targets, partially achieved two, and did not achieve four. Petroleum and petroleum product regulation for Q2 achieved two, partially achieved one out of three targets. And then for Q3, they achieved two, partially achieved one out of three targets. For Q4, they achieved two, partially achieved one. It was also out of three targets. Nuclear energy, for Q2, they achieved two, they partially achieved zero. That was out of four targets. For Q3, nuclear again, they achieved two, not achieved two, it was four targets. For Q4, they achieved one, did not achieve three out of four. Clean energy. For Q2, achieved two, partially achieved one, and not achieved one with four targets which they had for Q2. For Q3, clean energy, achieved one, partially achieved one, not achieved two, it's four targets which were set for that quota. For Q4, they achieved three, partially achieved one, not achieved one. You add them together, it gives you five. That is five targets. Programs and projects, which is normally called INEP. For Q2, they achieved four, partially achieved zero. They had five targets for Q2. For Q3, they achieved two, partially achieved one, and not achieved one. So that was four targets for that quota. Q4, INEP is achieved three, partially achieved one, and not achieved one. Five targets. Corporate services, which is admin, for Q2, achieved one, partially achieved zero, not achieved one. They had two targets for that quota. And for Q3, they had two targets, did not achieve any. And then for Q4, they had two targets, achieved one, did not achieve one. For financial services, financial management, Q2, achieved one, partially achieved zero, not achieved one. For Q3, finance, partially achieved one, they had one target. For Q4, same, they partially achieved one. Governance and compliance, Q2, achieved two, partially achieved two out of four targets. For Q3, achieved all targets. And for Q4, achieved three, partially achieved one. Next slide. Now, here, Chair, you can see is the comparative performance cumulative for the former DMR. You can see the implementation phases over there. You've got a cumulative implementation phase for Q2, Q3, Q4. And then you've got an average in the form of percentages. But in the middle, you see that yellow and red, it tells you the partially achieved and the not achieved. And there is an indication of the column there that speaks about the total targets per program. Now, in terms of performance for Q2, quarter two corporate services cumulatively achieved 81%. For Q3, cumulatively achieved 85, and that for Q2, 3, and 4, total number of targets, they had 27, they achieved 25, they partially achieved 1, and did not achieve one. Now, when you look into the annual average of the performance for corporate services, is 92.5. And then when you go to financial administration, for Q2, their performance cumulatively, it's 60%. For Q3, 60 again. And then for Q4, what they have achieved cumulatively at Q4, cumulatively, it was 11 targets out of 15 targets of all the quotas put together. Then it gives them an average of 73%. Mine health and safety, Q1, 66%, Q2, 66.6%, and for the three quotas, they had 21 targets. They achieved 17, partially achieved 2, did not achieve 2. Mine regulation, 69% Q2, 69% again Q2, and they had 26 targets, achieved 20 cumulatively, did not achieve 6. The average performance for the three quotas is 76%. Mineral policy and promotion, Q2, 66%. Same with Q3, 66%. Out of the total of 24 for the three quotas, they achieved 22 targets and did not achieve 2. So the performance, as you can look at it, it tells you that for all the quotas on DMR put together, they had 113 targets. They achieved 95, partially achieved 6, did not achieve 12. Cumulatively, the performance is at 84%. Next slide. Now, here is the highlights for the DOE side in terms of this quarterly implementation phases. 99.7 approved invoices were paid within 30 days. Schedule 3 SOEs, second draft APPs were submitted to the ministers. We conducted those number of meetings in BISO 6 and 19 foreign participants to advance energy agenda with the rest of the world were conducted. As you can see, rest of the world we had 6. Africa we have 3. And multilaterals 21. We also managed to have a draft commodity flow report during the year under review, during the period under review. We collated gas supply and gas consumption data, which informed the gas strategy report. The draft biofuel regulatory framework was tabled in cabinet. Next slide. We managed to produce or conduct a total of 1,014 petroleum site inspections, and then that was done through those three numbers. That is during the second quarter, 339, and then during the third quarter, we did 323, and then during the fourth quarter, we did 352. Our target was 1,200, and we had a shortfall of 186 inspections. 820 fuel samples were done, 290 for Q2, 256 for Q3, 274 for Q4. Our set target was 830. And therefore, our shortfall was 10 in terms of fuel inspection. 92% of the license applications approved during the period under review were issued with a minimum of 50% historically disadvantaged South Africans ownership. So for Q2, it was 89.4%. Q3, 92.3, Q4, 93.4, respectively. We had a total of 215,343 grid connections achieved for both ESCOM and municipalities during the period under review. The numbers in respect of the quotas are those reflected on the screen. Next slide. There is a report on interventions or support to municipalities who are struggling with electricity infrastructure. Three substations were completed, one substation upgraded, 172 kilometers of new megavolts power lines were completed, and 11 kilometers of existing megavolt power lines upgraded. 65 authorizations were approved, that is the nuclear site, and then we were able to meet the turnaround time of 8 weeks. So the numbers for the various quarterly phases are those ones reflected there. 6.3 terawatts per hour of energy savings was realized through the energy efficiency demand side management projects. The quantification of energy savings was completed mainly from the 12L tax incentive energy efficiency demand side management for municipalities. The approved 2018-19 annual compliance report on the environment management related matters was issued. Next slide. On the mining side, that is the DMR, Q2 to Q4 performance phases, on the tripartite health and safety initiative, the department participated at the Anglo-American Tripartite Health and Safety Initiative during the period of 28 to 29 November. The two-day summit gave an opportunity for stakeholders to engage on health and safety matters. World AIDS Day commemoration in this regard, on the 6th of December 2019, the department, in collaboration with Mine Health and Safety Council, hosted the World AIDS Day commemoration event in the Northern Cape. This event, Chair, was well attended by over 1,000 delegates. Next slide. On the release of the 2019 Mine Health and Safety Stats, the performance is as follows. On the 24th of Jan 2020, the Minister released mine health and safety statistics during the media briefing in Pretoria. The number of fatalities in the sector reported in 2019 was the lowest on record, with no disaster recorded for the first time since 2016. There was a 37% reduction on fatalities from 81 to 51 in 2019. The occupational diseases decreased by 23% from 4,483 cases in 2017 to 3,458 cases in 2018. The reduction was mainly on silicosis, pulmonary TB, and noise-induced hearing loss, with 29%, 24%, and 22% respectively. Next slide. On the regulatory side, we published the draft upstream petroleum bill. And Chair, this is to say this draft bill is opening up investment in the petroleum space. The total gas found has been the highlight for investment. The company has further committed to drill more holes this year in 2020, that was in June. This is a huge boost for the economy. South Africa improved as a mining destination according to the 2019 Fraser Institute survey on mining, indicating that the investment drive and regulatory framework provides confidence to the investor community. On international matters, through South Africa's interventions and negotiations, the KPCS just move the present. There was named the presentation slightly. There's something that is obstructing me there. I can't read that word. Oh, it's okay. Or maybe I must get it from my chair. If you can bear with me, so that I can just move into my own presentation, and I should be able to find. There's something that is obscuring me that I can't read there. I'm trying to get it. Okay. My apology. I don't know what is that. Okay.
We are looking for Central African Republic.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And then the Zimbabwean diamonds are now able to enter international markets on international matters. Next slide. Rehabilitation program chair, here we are saying 61 mine shafts were sealed, and this includes those that were outstanding from the previous year. And then as far as asbestos are concerned, our performance is that three asbestos mines were rehabilitated, but two of these were completed during the last week of May due to the lockdown. Next slide. Corporate services. In corporate services, a number of bursaries acquired and recipient identified to study towards mining related qualifications are as follows. We've got 55. And then the target that we set was 40, so we over exceeded the target. And then on percentage of tenure's responses to opinions, appeals, inquiries, agreements, and litigations, our performance is that 88% was achieved out of against the target of 80. On finalization of accident inquiries, especially Palabora Mining, as well as the collaboration protocol with NPA in Mpumalanga on Lily Mine, we were able to do those inquiries, to finalize the inquiries in that aspect. Consolidation of both Northern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal regional offices. As you know, Chair and members, is that after the merger, the two departments, DOE and DMR, had their separate regional offices. Now we're trying to consolidate these offices in the various provinces. So there we are saying those two provinces in terms of performance that has been done. Their vacancy rate, we were able also to deal with it. It's below 10%. In terms of against the threshold. The department has also achieved 100% submission rate in respect of financial disclosures for SMS. Next slide. Okay. In terms of employment equity, we've got 60% DDGs representation at that level, and then 20 women from the Greater Taung have been enrolled for small-scale mining skills program called Women's Diggers.
Mr. Mlauzi,
DG,
with the powers that the chairperson has entrusted me with within this meeting, you are consuming much time going through this presentation. We still have the financials. Can you just take members through quickly? going through each and every word, please, because we only have 7 minutes. The CFO must still come in.
Okay, on this slide, one other thing. Thank you, DG. We are also embarking on the establishment of the gender-based violence subcommittee in all the regions, and then we are establishing those GBV subcommittees in the regions. Next slide. Thank you very much, Chair, DG, and committee members. I think this was the end of the program performance. The next one will be finance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, DG, DDGs, colleagues, good morning. I'm Yvonne Shetty, and I'll present the financial performance. The slide in front of you is the financial performance at 30th of September, that is 6 months ended for the financial year. The first column, it says 7.1 billion. The department had an original budget of 7.4 billion for the 1920 financial year, which was adjusted by 246 million to 7.18 billion due to an adjustment, a special budget adjustment. For the year, for the period under review, that's the year-to-date budget, is 4.1 billion. We've actually spent 3 billion. The year-to-date variance is 1 billion. That is the funds we've not spent. We have not spent it in compensation of employees, which was 13.7 million. Goods and services, we did not spend 56.9 million. Transfers and subsidies, 949 million. And I'll explain these variances, Chairperson, when we get to the variances by program. Can you move to the next slide, please? Chair, on this slide, it gives you the variances by program. So for the program administration, which covers all the admin functions, we have not spent 25.1 million for the 6 months ended. And the main reasons for not spending here, Chair, was the compensation of employees and for goods and services. And program two did not spend 7.6 million. And the main reason for not spending these were the delays in two planned projects, which was Clean Fuels 2 and Footprint and Saving Potential Project. The next program, Petroleum and Petroleum Products Regulation, at an underspending of 5.4 million. And the 5.4 is made up of some delays in the projects that were planned, which was the Petroleum Product Act licensing system, the LPG audit, and the BBBE monitoring evaluation and reporting system project. The next program is electrification, which has the biggest underspend of 949 million. And the main reason, Chair, is for non-grid households, which was 83.8 million that was not spent due to delays in some admin processes. INAF municipalities also had an underspend of 14.2 million. And this was due to withholding some of the transfers as per the regulations. INAF ESCOM had an underspend of 843.5 million, but this payment has been rectified in the month that follows. And Chair, Nuclear had an underspending of 909.4 million, and that was also due to some delays in the projects. Chair, that covers the one, and in the slides that follow, as the explanations which I have gone through briefly, covering the reasons for these variances. Please move on. Next slide, please. I've covered this. You can go. And you'll move now to the next quarter, please. Chair, under quarter three, which is for 9 months ended, 31 December 2019, the budget here was 7.1 million, no changes to the budget for the year. The year-to-date budget was 6.1 billion. We have spent for the 9 months 5.7 billion. We have not spent 335 million, which is 5.47 10% of the budget. And in compensation of employees, we have an underspend of 18 million. Chairperson, it's mainly due to the merger, and vacancies were put on hold pending this the finalization of this process. Goods and services, we had an underspend of 40.7 million, and I'll give some reasons for that when I get to the programs. And transfers and subsidies also had an underspend of 274.8 million, and we had a small underspend in capital assets. Next slide, please. The same variances that were explained previously, Chairperson and members, the 335 million I've explained in compensation, goods and transfers, the amounts that were unspent. Now I'm doing it by program, administration, making up the 335 million that's highlighted in green. In the fourth column, where it says year-to-date variances, the 26.1 million that was not spent under administration. The main reason for this is the compensation of employees that was 7.4 million due to vacant positions, and which I explained was as a result of the announcement of the merger. And then we had in goods and services underspending by 21.2 million. This underspending was mainly due to the head office accommodation, which is being paid lower than budgeted for due to a dispute that's been raised with DPW. Energy policy and planning at an underspend of 10.6 million. And the main reason here, Chairperson, for the variance, compensation of employees at an underspend of 5.5 million due to vacancies, operating expenditure, 3.4 million. And again here, Chairperson, the same two projects that was in Q2 is still being delayed, and that's Clean Fuels 2 and the footprint and saving potential project remains delayed. Petroleum and petroleum products regulation, the 4.6 million, which was not spent at 31st of December 2019. 3 million was for compensation of employees. The balance, 5.2 million, was in operating expenditure, and they had delays in the fuel sampling testing project and the PPAL system maintenance and development, LPG audit, and the BBBE monitoring and evaluation reporting system also showed a slow spend. The next electrification and energy program and project, project management, it had underspend of 292 million. And the main reasons for the 292 million, 1.72 million was the result of vacant positions. And then under transfers, we had an INEP non-grid households, which was unspent by 166 million due to some delays in the implementation plan. INEP municipalities had 114.86 million underspending due to Treasury invoking Section 216 of the Constitution against some of the municipalities, which forced the department to withhold these transfers. And there was an underspend in business and advisory services of 9.7 million due to the delays in the non-grid monitoring and evaluation and electrification master plan projects. Program 5, that's nuclear energy, had an underspend at 31 December 2019 of 9.5 million. And here, Chairperson, the 9.5 was mainly due to operational expenditure. It was the benchmark study on international nuclear research and development of funding mechanism for decommissioning and decontamination programs. And the last one, Chairperson, is the clean energy, which had an overspend of 8.1 million. And it's mostly in the operating area of operating expenditure. It's overspending due to payments of the solar water heater units, storage fees, offset by underspending in some other areas within the program. Chairperson, that covers, and the following slides have exactly what I've explained, the explanation that has been captured onto the slides. So if you move on to the next slide, I've covered all of this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That brings us to the end of our presentation. I must emphasize this point, Chair, that we
have ensured that we move with speed in line with what we presented to you in attaining our objectives in those quarters. Where we failed to achieve, we'll be able to explain the reasons that attributed to failure to achieve some of the targets. Now, we understand, Chair, that we have laws, and we cannot use laws as an excuse for the failure to obtain or to achieve our targets, but we'll be able to explain. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, DG, for the presentation. You tried your level best. Honorable Members, any take or must I do the normal procedure? Honorable Masaule, you're with your 3 minutes. Honorable Honorable Mailem, Honorable Sonyane, I will try and round you up to all of you. Honorable Malinga, Honorable is Mr. Numalo here?
No, Chair.
If he's not here, and then Honorable anyone I did not mention, Honorable Volmarans, and then it will be Honorable it will be Honorable Langa, and then Honorable Phillips, and then Honorable Kula. Anyone I'm leaving out who is in the meeting?
It's Mr. Bilangulu, Chair.
Oh, Honorable Bilangulu will come also immediately after, if he's in, he's there. Can we go, Honorable Masaule, anything on the report?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you. Good morning to the Director General and the respective DDGs and the staff in the department, the staff in Parliament, and honorable members, as we welcome Honorable Langa to the committee. Chair, I am particularly happy with the financials of the department, as it indicates consistency in the spending patterns. When you look at the last report of the financials and this one under review, I must say they've been doing well under the circumstances of merger. However, having said that, Chair, I want to go to one slide, but they are not numbered, so I will just read the sentence. It says a total of 215 and 343 grid connections achieved for both Eskom and municipalities during quarter under review, i.e., and then it gives the numbers per quarter. And if you look at the above sentences there, they have targets and shortfalls. What was the target of the grid connections that were supposed to be done, and what was the shortfall? I see we have managed to connect 215,343, but what were we supposed to, as a target, connect, and what would be the shortfall? That is the first point, Chair, and it's linked to the fact that the underspending in non-grid electrification to me, it's a bit concerning because non-grid electrification forms part of a major service delivery imperative of the department. And that is where our citizens, our people get to feel that our government is working. And if there's underspending there year in, year out, it creates problems. That is the section where we have to improve at all costs. The last point, Chair, is a concern around the National Solar Water Heater Program, which every year we get stories about monies and so forth. And I'm saying this because when you look at this report and the financials, there's a clear indication that the budget shifts within different programs were mainly to provide for the expenditure in this program. And it can't be that every year we deal with the same issue. And when we have an opportunity to shift budgets from within different programs, it's always to cater for this program. It's a bit concerning, and I so wish that the department can have ways in which this issue is put to rest in the coming years. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. First of all, let me apologize for not putting on my video. My Wi-Fi is a little bit unstable due to load shedding. Chair, I have several questions. The first is that I note that in reporting on the performance achievements, there are different methodologies used between DMR and DOE. And I would hope that going forward, we standardize this and we have a consistent reporting structure. In other words, if we're reporting number of targets achieved, partially achieved, etc., then that's what we should report for both. If we're reporting percentages, then that's what we should report for both. I would argue that the number of targets is probably a better method. Then I noticed, particularly on Department of Energy, that there were very, very high numbers of missed targets. So, for example, in Q2, the DOE missed 11 out of 29, in Q3, 14 out of 30, and in Q4, 10 out of 32. And I'd like to know the reason for that. On slide 23, it stated that the payment to ESCOM for INEP was delayed in September 2019. Can I get a reason why that payment was delayed? On slide 50, you talk about the number of mining rights for transformational purposes, but what was the total number of mining rights that were issued in the period under review? On slide 62, you give the number of shafts sealed, and you are well behind your quarterly target. Can you give us a reason why that is? Then on slide 92, there's a report on the submission of the gas strategy report. And the reason why this was not achieved was that a lack of resources impacted negatively on the submission. What resources impacted on that, and has it been resolved? On slide 93, you talk about the offtake agreement with the DRC. What is the status of that? On slide 95, the decommissioning and decontamination policy. What is holding up that program? Okay, then I have a particular concern on slide 97. You say that the project was put on hold. This is number 4.3 on that side at the bottom. Was put on hold to await approval of the IRP and then didn't have funds to complete it. But it was at that stage already a bid adjudication. Why would you put something out to tender if no funds were available for the project? In other words, what happened to the funds that were available when it was put on hold at bid adjudication stage? On slide 102, the Izimbo PPPs are marked as not achieved, but no reasons are given. Can we get some clarity on that? And then, Chair, just throughout this document, a common issue, particularly in the Department of Energy, although it applies equally to both, a common issue seems to be the inability to process legislation. My question is, does the department have the necessary skills to draft and process legislation? And if not, what is being done about it, and why don't they have those skills? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malem. Honorable Tanyan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone, Chair, in this coldest day in South Africa. Chairperson, I just have just one comment, which is on understanding. You know, understanding is a crime, Chairperson, and the department must try to improve in those departments, because if we understand, it means that we're not delivering on what we're supposed to deliver. So maybe they can just improve on that one. And also, Chair, at the end of the presentation, there was some talks about the gender violence. I just want to understand exactly what the department is doing on the gender violence, to address gender violence. And, you know, also maybe what I can ask, what is it being done to assist the working conditions of women in the mining sector? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Malinga.
Good morning, Chairperson, and everybody in the meeting. And let me welcome the report by the department. Chairperson, it's always heartwarming to hear about the employment equity, especially when it touches on the percentages that the women, the number of women in the department. Chairperson, I commend the 60% women DDGs in the department. But, Chair, I also want to echo Honorable Matlaule's sentiments on these solar water geyser storages challenges, that they need to be resolved speedily. Chairperson, the 18019 understanding on employees' compensation, I heard the CFO saying it was due to the merger between Northern Cape offices and regional offices of KZN. Were there any employees who lost their jobs during this measure, Chair? And the anticipated gas fund, Chairperson, of drilling more holes by June 2020, has that happened or was it halted by COVID-19? And what are the mitigation strategies in on this regard, Chair? In terms of energy and policy, Chair, I also heard the CFO saying that they underspend for 10.679 due to vacancy rates. How are they going to run policies and planning in energy when they don't adhere to that? Because even on the report, Mr. Mulawuti was reporting in terms of policy, a lot has not been achieved. Thank you very much. Oh, Chairperson, you know me and mine and health and safety. that is also commendable, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members, Honorable Malinga. My apologies if you don't find me. I'm a victim of load shedding too. It's dark where I am now. Can I then ask, is there a point, Honorable Bilangulu? Well, Bilangulu, Ministry of Finance means concerned. Honorable Volmaran.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues and the administration who are with us. Chairperson, my concerns have been sufficiently covered, and just an emphasis on there's a slide, I think it's slide 23 on what I have, and it's also more or less the same as slide 30, and which speaks both of the underspending. And I just wanted to check that this underspending is related to the solar heater issue. What impact or where are we with it? I've seen in one of our programs there would be an update on it. So it definitely had an impact on it, and therefore had an impact on service delivery issues. I think that speaks much about the underspending. Same for the other underspending that relates to the staff complement. But generally, at the person, my issues were covered by both Honorable Masaule and also Honorable Mailam also touched on a number of issues that I would have wanted to speak on. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Langa. Problem. Is Honorable Langa not in now? We pass. Okay, Honorable Phillips.
Morning, thank you, Chair. Apologies for all my technical malfunctions this morning. I would just like the following questions to be answered, please. The electrification underspend. That's a huge problem. So many of our people don't have electricity, and then we have also all the illegal connections because our people don't have electricity, which is costing us a lot of money. I find the underspend on electrification to be unacceptable because we are not looking after the poorest of the poor that actually need power. So I think that that needs to be looked at and more attention needs to be paid. It's now 11 months since I've been asking to do an oversight visit to check on those users. I've been asking for the address. I said I would go and do the oversight. I have the address stored. And the fact that we are not going to do an oversight visit there and that I'm not providing the address. That we set a date and that we actually go and check up on these. Were actually issued within the limited time frame. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Phillips. Honorable Kula.
No, Mandi. Madukbule Ele Salo. Greetings to the DG Advocate Mukwena and Tim Balak and all the members of the Portfolio Committee. So my first question is around the comparative performance in the department. That what is the department's plan to improve on areas where they've partially achieved and in areas where they've not achieved? What is their plan to ensure that they improve in that regard? My second question, Chair, is that this presentation was long now. My issues are here, there, are all over the place, which is something I don't like. Yeah, my second question is around the petroleum site inspection shortfall. What is it that the department plans to do to rectify some of this shortfall? In the presentation, Chair, around license application, There was said that there were 92 license applications which have been approved, with 50% being formally historically disadvantaged South Africans. I think I would like to commend the department when it comes to this, because this is the kind of transformation we want to see, and even more. But I want to understand that in the 50% of historically disadvantaged South Africans, how many women and youth do we have in that regard? Under corporate service, Chair, in terms of the number of bursaries, they said that their initial target was 40%, but they've been able now to cover 55%. I believe that the department must be commended for such a drastic improvement, that they are even able to go above their own target, Chair. Honorable Malinga has already spoken about that. That we appreciate, because when you look at the staff composition of the department, that there's 60% of women who are DDGs, and I think that is also quite commendable that we have got women in senior positions within the department, Chairperson. Another issue which I feel that it is quite commendable, Chair, is around the small-scale mining, that there were 20 women identified in a rural area in Taung to be trained for this program. After the visit of the president, I think it is quite commendable that as part of the transformation agenda within the department, we are able also to incorporate women in rural areas to be part of the improvements that are done in the mining sector. Even around the GBV centers that have been opened in various offices, I would want to get an explanation, not only comment, say, what is the specific role of those GBV centers, and how are they going to help in fighting the scourge of gender-based violence? While I concur with the argument raised, the submission made by Honorable Mahlaule around the electrification program, Chairperson, that it is a service delivery imperative, I wanted to understand, because when I could not quite catch the presentation on what the CFO had said, because in terms of the 292 million that have been set aside, 166 million was for delay. I don't know, he said, in some programs, which I want to understand, what is those programs? There was some money that the treasury has withheld money due to municipalities not being compliant, and that is not an issue, in my own view, we can relegate to the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. If municipalities are not complying, there's nothing that the department can do. It's not even in their own space to play into ensuring that municipalities comply. It's an issue that municipalities have got to handle with the treasury, but we must emphasize that our municipalities must not hinder service delivery program by not complying with treasury, because we need them to comply so that we close all the loopholes that are there with regards to the electrification program, Chairperson, because we want to see this program becoming a major success, that we are able to electrify a majority of households. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, DJ, is there any member that I would have left by error? Okay, DJ.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will allocate the DDGs and the Chief Directors that will be responding to the questions. They will go in this order. We will have the CFO, followed by the DDG Corporate Services, Ma'am Hilda Mhlongo, and thereafter the Chief Inspector of Mines, Mr. Msiza. Number four will be the DDG Mwabe. Five, it will be Mr. Mbambo, the DDG Nuclear. Then six, it will be Mr. Malawzi, the head of strategy, and Mr. Mukwena. And the last one will be DDG Malebe. They will proceed in that order. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just try and respond to some of the questions that were raised in the finance sections. Chairperson, across many of the questions that were raised was regarding the underspending in programs and projects. I have noted all the comments. Chairperson, under the municipalities, the underspending in terms of withholding the funding to non-performing municipalities, the DDG, the acting DDG, I think, has joined the meeting, and they'll perhaps elaborate on the criteria and the process that is followed to withhold this funding, and how we don't withhold it indefinitely when the process is followed and the missing information or the non-delivery has been rectified, that transfers takes place in accordance with National Treasury as well. So I think that DDG will also give a little bit more information in this area. Chairperson, yes, there has been underspending in many projects for Q2 and Q3 as well. The question was, what is the department doing to address this matter? The department has undertaken subtitle controls, and they've implemented a project management system with tighter controls to monitor the progress on all projects, and the reporting is at an EXCO level and to minister. So this process is currently implemented, and the monitoring thereof is happening. So you'll find a better turnaround in terms of projects and the delivery, and at the same time, the spending will also improve in these projects that were not spent in the previous financial year. So it's being controlled at the moment. Chairperson, I think there was one question under Eskom delay for the September non-payment. Chairperson, I'll come back at the end if I'm allowed, DG, just to give you that answer. I'm just trying to get into my system to give you that response. If I can stop there, Chairperson, and DG. Thank you.
Namhlanga.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. I will respond on questions relating to underspend on compensation of employees. Indeed, EXCO took a decision to put on hold the filling of positions following the announcement of the president for the merger of the two departments. And in anticipation that during reconfiguration, we will have duplicate positions resulting in duplicate roles, EXCO agreed that we should hold on to filling the positions. This was to ensure that we avoid a long excess list when we do our matching and placing. And it was also informed by the government policy that there should be job security within the public service. And I must indicate, Chairperson, that this is panning out quite well. At some point, we will report that we do not have a long list of excess employees. In terms of creation of gender-based violence, committees are being set in the regions and within the department. And in the main, what we focus on is creation of awareness. And in particular as well, we have women and men's forums where we deal with issues that are directly impacting women and are directly impacting men that may result in gender-based violence. So it's more about education, it's about empowering one another, and where individuals have issues, they are referred and assisted with any needs that they might present during this forums or discussion platforms. Thank you, Chair.
No. Who's that one now?
Oh.
You can't do that. We're in a meeting here. Take us serious. We can't just tell people every time switch off your mic. If you are not communicating with the committee or in the committee, either as a member or as a staff or just a guest, make it a point that your mic is off. Continue, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members and colleagues. To respond to Honorable Sonyana's questions on women in mining. Indeed, as a department, we have also, we take the health and safety, including the security of women in mining, very seriously, Honorable members. Hence, we have ensured that through the Mine Health and Safety Council, there are programs that are put in place, working together with organized labor and also business to protect the health and safety and security of women. In this regard, Honorable Sonyana, we have established regional tripartite forums in all the provinces where women come together from the mining sector to engage on the challenges that they're experiencing at the mine. And through those engagements, it has helped us to inform our programs to protect the health and safety and security of women. It has also helped us to come up with research programs, because what is very key for us is to come up with effective research programs that will inform policy and also the health and safety initiatives that we came up with. One of the classical ones that we have also been dealing with, it was the issue of the PPEs, the protective equipment for women in the mining sector. We've been having...
Cesar, sorry. Yvonne, can you switch off your mic, please? Can you unmute your mic, please? There is a person by the name of Only See Yvonne here. Can you switch off your mic, please? And respect the committee meeting. Because you are somewhere you are conversing with someone in the background and is disturbing the meeting. Continue, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the PPEs, indeed, we looked at the issue of the PPEs because the overalls that have been provided at the mines previously for women were not adequate. So we came up with a guideline, which is requires that there must be a mandatory code of practice to deal with this matter, including with helmets, including with boots as well. One of the things that we've also been looking at is what we call the self-rescuers. In case of an emergency, some of them, they were big, so they were heavy. So we've encouraged the mines to look at that so that they can make them sizable to carry around. Also, you've also spoken about the issue of sexual harassment and the security. We, in 2015, there was a lot of cases that have been reported by the sector in this regard. So we came up also through research with booklets, videos to assist the mines to make sure that this is prevented in the mining sector. And I think what is also important for me to emphasize, Honorable Sonyana, is that since then, 2015, we've been having yearly women in mining, we can call them indabas or commemorations, where we will assess the performance of our programs as a sector that we've agreed upon at the council to make sure that we achieve those interventions for the programs that we came up with. In fact, last week, Friday, we held one for this year where women or the mining sector came together to reflect on the programs that we have agreed upon, including on research, including on the interventions that I've referred to. We've also invited women to come and present their experiences on health and safety and security challenges at the sector and how we can improve on that. We had one woman CEO, mining company CEO, who also presented the measures that they've been implementing in their company to make sure that we have a significant improvement. So as a department, through the council, working together with organized labor and business, will also continue to put major focus on that. And lastly, Honorable Malinga, I would like to say thank you for commending the department on the health and safety milestones that we've achieved. It's one of the things that we'll continuously working together with organized labor and the business strive to ensure that there's a significant and sustainable improvement. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Chair, honorable members, DG and colleagues, just one question on the sealing of old mine shafts. You know, Chair, this is one area in which we are highly challenged because of the criminal element that exists within these sites. So some of the sites could not be completed because some of the officials have actually been confronted with guns by the Zamazamas and they had to pull out of the sites. And on some sites, it was contractors that had been appointed by Council for Geoscience. But partly on a few of them, one or two of them, there were delays with procurement processes within the Council for Geoscience. But in the main, it's the criminal element that exists within these sites. But we are engaging law enforcement agencies to support us in this regard. But it is a problem which we are looking at quite seriously because it is delaying our delivery. And it will be the same this year because we have been facing these challenges. But we really are seeing some improvements, and I'm sure members would have seen in the media the number of arrests that police have effected on these illegal mining sites, because most of these shafts, particularly in the East and West Rand, are those where there's these high numbers of Zamazamas. So at times it becomes very difficult for the teams to move in and start doing the work. Thank you, Chair.
Babambambo.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and DG and the colleagues. I would like to respond to the question raised by the Honorable Member Mylam about what are the reasons for the delays in the decommissioning and decontamination policy. Honorable Members, the decommissioning and the decontamination policy is an important policy that the department is working on to ensure that we've got policy certainty in this area. However, the project was delayed mainly because we could not procure the services of an external service provider to conduct the cost studies in time for the project. These were due to the challenges that we experienced in the supply chain management. However, these have been subsequently been addressed in the department. To date, the progress is such that we are in the process now of appointing this service provider to conduct the study on the cost associated with decommissioning and decontamination policy. In order to include this as a part of the input in the policy formulation, we could also report to the committee that a position paper or a discussion paper for the decommissioning and decontamination policy was approved in the department by the minister, and it was released for public comments. We are in the period now where this position paper is currently being consulted with the public as an input into the policy formulation. We expect that we should have a draft policy by the end of this financial year, which we can then subject it to cabinet approval for the policy to be then consulted with the public in this respect. I thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee, the DG colleagues. The question by Honorable Mylam on the mining rights that we issued for the period under review. We issued from April 2019 or between April 2019 to March 2020, we issued 26 mining rights. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will respond on the question that relates to what actual target set for the electrification of households. I must say, Chair and members, that in fact, when you look at slide 10, which we presented, the connections, total number of connections through ESCOM and municipalities, we said it was 215,343. Now, in terms of the target, the answer is that the target which was set for the whole year was 195,000. So there it is clearly so that the department has actually performed well. Now, with regard to the solar water heaters, the question was why is the solar water heaters program not moving as planned? I must indicate that this program or project is dependent on the number of dependencies. In other words, the things that we had to do before we could put those cans of warm water over the roofs, a number of things. For starters, is that we need to go and assess the readiness with the relevant municipalities, and then we need to produce the reports. But again, they require water inside those solar water geysers. So the water quality is being tested as well. We also had to do what we call the social facilitation with the relevant municipalities. Now, as we do that, and then we follow with another step, which is the technical assessment. Then we start with the training, although the training we are being assisted the WCTAS. And then from there, we'll then have to go through the process of appointing service providers and so on. But also, we were also doing the inspection for the storage facilities, because you'll remember we did have a problem in terms of the storage, just to check as to whether those keys are sitting there are still in the same number that have been put there before. But also we had to move those geysers to storage facilities which we were not supposed to pay. So that in itself are the number of factors that would have impacted, but that has since been resolved, and the project is now underway, and we hopefully that the next time when we report, there will be an improvement in that regard. There was also a question that speaks about consistency in terms of reporting between the DOP and the DMR. Because it was a transition, we have now, in fact, we are putting together, we have put a draft reporting system, which is taking cue from the reporting framework from the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. So in our next report, this juncture of separate or different reporting system will be eliminated. I thank you.
Kwamkwene, is there anything from your side?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, DG and honorable members. DG, Mr. Mlauzi has just covered the question from honorable Malem that I wanted to respond to on inconsistency of performance information. Thank you.
Okay, we have the last two colleagues. It will be Mr. Mpofu and Mr. Makube, in that order, colleagues.
Okay. Thanks, DG. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. I will just be supplementing on what the CFO has said with regards to the two questions that were raised by the honorable members. One question was the withholding of money to municipalities, and the second question was about ESCOM's delay payment, I think in September. On the first question is that, yes, we do withhold money to non-performing municipalities. There is a process that is followed with them. We first notify them of the non-performance and basically give them a chance to correct the issues. If then there is no improvement after that process, We then follow the treasury DORA process where we regazette the money. The money does not get lost to the program. The money gets redirected to a municipality that basically has outperformed, but that still needs money. Therefore, that money is shifted from the non-performing municipality to a municipality that has basically exceeded performance in that current year. The second question is the delay for Eskom payment is that last year the budget was revised owing to the financial constraint that the country is undergoing. So basically their budget was reduced from what was agreed at the beginning of the financial year or in the contracting period. So what happened when that budget was reduced? It budget reduced by approximately 250 million rands. Basically, some of the projects that were supposed to be carried with that money were either deferred or some of them were carried out from the savings that have been realized through the program over the financial year in question. That's basically the response to those questions. Thanks, DG.
Thank you very much, DG. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. The question that I would like to respond to is the one that was posed by Honorable Ngula. In terms of the breakdown of the applications, the significant or the majority of the applications, especially on wholesale, petroleum wholesale, are youth. However, I would request, Chair, with your permission, that we be afforded a bit of time to present the actual figures, because we have not compile them in those categories. I think the focus was mainly ensuring that it's historically disadvantaged as a category. But in terms of the subcategories, would request that we go back to the file and effectively provide the committee with a breakdown in terms of youth, women, and people with disabilities. With your permission, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDGs and Chief Directors. Chair, I'll just round up a few outstanding questions and also do a comment. We welcome the comments from honorable members, especially the questions relating to the non-achievement on some of the targets that we have put for the department, which is the former DOE and DMRE. Chair, now moving forward, as the question has been raised, what are we going to do? We are hard at work in ensuring that we all comply with what we have put before you as the targets that we'll be able to achieve. And also the officials, we have our meetings from time to time to make sure that there is a proper monitoring through relevant people within the department or supervisors. And so we can really make this commitment that will make sure that there is a compliance. Where there is a deviation, it will be under extraordinary compelling circumstances. We'll make sure that there is a full compliance. It relates to underspending as well as it has been raised by Honorable Hlonyane as well. The other issue, Chair, even though that Honorable Phillips was not clear, but one could just sense the question, what she wanted to say, the signal was not good. It is in relation with the inspection that you would want to conduct as the committee. In fact, she wanted to do it herself. But I think, Chair, the appropriate way of dealing with it is that we know that we communicate with you as the committee. When you want to have a oversight visit, we will be ready to support honorable members to go on oversight to those areas where the solar heater geysers have been installed.
The other issue, Chair, that has been raised, it is in relation with the inability to process legislation. The question is whether do we have the capacity as the department. The answer to that question is in affirmative. And the reason for delays, sometimes it is due to a number of factors, as you know, that you need to consult, and you have to go through the cabinet processes, and after that you must go and consult with communities, and so it is quite a cumbersome process. But we have taken note of the concern from the Honourable Member and Honourable Members that we need to expedite or accelerate our pace in processing legislation. But as for the capacity in the department, we do have a full capacity of people that can draft legislation. Also, Chair, I'll just round up this question. We did not have any casualties as a result of COVID-19 where people have lost their jobs, and also with the reconfiguration of government departments. The staff members that are in access, there are opportunities that have been identified for them in the department. Now, we also understand that in other areas, if other departments need people, we'll be able to assist with that. But as of now, we are still fine as a department. You will remember, Chair and Honourable Members, that the decision for the reconfiguration of government departments is precisely to improve the efficiency in terms of us being able to deliver on our promises to the people. There was also a question on drilling. I think this question can be responded in short by stating to members that the project will start excuse me, Honourable Members. The process will start now in September in terms of those holes that must be drilled. Now, the issue of, question that related to the bid adjudication, why the matter was taken to bid adjudication if there were no funds. We have appointed a bid adjudication, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that is fully capacitated because it is one of the issues that must first be looked into whenever there is a tender that we need to take out to ascertain and assess as to whether there are funds available. And so based on that, then we'll be able to move. I think the DDG has also tried to respond to this question. I think those were the remaining questions, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. I'm not gonna bar members, but I wanted to go to the next item on the agenda, especially when the majority of members seems to be affected by network challenges. Honourable Langa, I didn't see it initially. Gave notice that. He suffers the same network challenge and therefore has been kicked out. We will then have to see what is the better way. Except to say before, if there is any member who feels that there is something so itchy to raise, DG, there are just few issues for me that I think are quite critical. We hope to factor them in. The first issue is not just the turnaround time. It might be important that post the COVID-19 and the recovery of the economy, we can get a sense of the challenges, in particular the turnaround time and the ease of ensuring that investments are able to yield the results that are required. I must say that when you've got it may not just be a low turnover of rights issue, it's also the utilization of those rights. And I think that's one issue we will have down the line to engage with yourself, that at times it is reported that there are many companies that are, or individuals that are sitting with either prospecting or mining rights that exceed the prescribed time in terms of the policy directive. Where you know how much time, a specific time, prospecting right is and a mining right. We might have to go back and so that we can see whether we are not responsible for blocking investment, because the failure to utilize a mining right or prospecting right is equivalent to the anti-investment. We might have to then, in terms of the program, because you can meet the target to issue as many rights, but how active are those rights on either exploration or mining? The second part is the effectiveness of the system. To what extent do they talk to transformation? Obviously, first you must have investment. The second, not that the other one is lesser than the other, but you can't transform if you've got no investment. So I think down the line, we will have to measure how effective is the system itself that we are putting in place. So I'm just saying, looking at this thing, the second part is the point that was raised. And I'm not saying that it's happening in this department. In fact, I always say, to some degree, the level of performance by general standards, maybe they are low. I'm not disputing that the performance doesn't show to be bad. But to what extent are we spending where we are not supposed to spend? It might be nice to know. For an example, when it comes to matters of litigation and so forth, what measurements do you have in place that will assist expenditure, so that your assessment system can tell you whether you pay what you are supposed to pay? The last point is that you are not the same like many departments. Part of the thing that has been an outcry is that the majority of departments have been spending money on consultants. But just to understand the internal controls that you have, so that we can see whether you use what you have. It might be linked to what Honorable Mailam had raised initially in terms of the skills capacity that you have, whether in terms of legislation, but in general, so that we can see whether, because part of the experience that I have seen now is that we pay people, we pay consultants for work off what we are told there is a person employed to that position. So I'm saying the modus operandi, how do you manage, it may not be for now, how do you manage to ensure that what may force you to go out, it is simple because there is no capacity, not just for someone is given a responsibility, then shift that and give it to someone else. But I'm saying you are not, at this stage, I don't think you are at that level where more of your money is sent to work that was supposed to be done internally. And I always ask this question, what is this person being paid for if that work is outsourced to somebody from outside? So I'm saying we might be moving towards that now to understand not just the targets, even how you set your targets, but also to look at each and every cent, how is it spent. So my only worry when I look at your financials, you've got financial spend that is even R1 billion. When you've got so much low base in terms of funding, state funding. Now, R1 billion to you is too much. Maybe to those people who have got 100 billion budgets and so forth. But for you, as an overall department, we can have R1 billion, especially if it's in relation, the fourth quarter would have ended in March. So the COVID implications may not necessarily be factored in this exercise. So I don't want you to talk about spending for the sake of spending, but at the same time, to understand when I can't get a clear justification except to say maybe there were fears during the measures that monies may go where they are not supposed. But if you want to make a comment on that part at this stage, you have to. But I don't want to limit any member. Is there any other honorable member who feels that is itching to get just clarity on one part, but also let's conserve time? Any member? Okay. It means members are satisfied. Do you want to make your final comment on this matter of Umkhwele and your team?
Chair, we would like to take note of the comments that you have just made, especially on the question of sterilization of mineral resources. I think that is a very profound point that you have just made, Chair. We'll make sure that we prioritize this point or submission. And so the other issue is in relation with the time frame. It's a matter that we are currently working on in the department. As you know, that we have multiple players when it comes to the licensing and also external parties as well. We'll make sure that at least we have started with a conversation with our sister departments around this matter. And so, other issues, Chair, we have taken note of transformation of the system or to transform the system, and also the issue on spending. We have taken note of that as well as litigation. And the matter on consultants, I know that it was raised by the honorable members as well previously, the same issue of the consultants in the department. And so we have taken note of all these issues, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay, let's go to your legislative framework.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson and Honorable Members, we are not going to consume a lot of time on this legislative framework because it is indeed a framework in terms of what we are planning to do as the department. Now, what you're going to do here, we're just going to give you what is the intent of the bill and also the time frame that we have put for the finalization of the bill or the process, actually not finalization as such, but the process that we would be undertaking. DDG Ngwabe, who is the head of the branch, will be taking us through the presentation together with the team of relevant officials that are experts. I think this is also a way of displaying to the honorable members in terms of the capacity that we're having in the department of the officials that can draft or formulate legislation. But each will not take more than 3 minutes, Chair. Thank you very much. Over to you, DDG.
Thank you, DG. If we could have the presentation put up. The chief directors are in the meeting. They will run through the presentation along the lines of the outline that DG has just given. Without consuming a lot of time. And the main focus really is for us to spell out the strategic intent for each bill and where we are with the process and the timelines in terms of when are we likely to table bills in cabinet, others for public comments, others would be tabled for minister to proceed and table in Parliament. So I'll hand over to the chief directors at this point. Thank you. Ms. Madia?
Yes, ma'am.
We can't hear you, Ms. Madia.
My apologies for that. Am I audible now?
Yes, you may proceed.
Okay. I thank DG and good morning to the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. My name is Sibong Nemadie. I will be taking you through the draft Upstream Petroleum Resources Development Bill. This bill, Honorable Members, is new, but the provisions of the bill are not that new. They are currently provided for in terms of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act under Chapter 6. This bill seeks to regulate the upstream petroleum industry. In 2013, we introduced the bill in Parliament, but the bill lapsed in Parliament in end of April. And the lapsing of the bill, the department saw it as an opportunity to separate the mineral provisions from the petroleum provisions and provide for a bill that sufficiently caters for the petroleum industry. We have since developed the bill. In December 2019, we published the bill for public comment, and we've to date consulted with the stakeholders who submitted written submissions on the bill. We have also we believe that the bill, honorable chairs and members, will regulate the development of the industry. It will create a conducive environment for growth, investment. The industry has often said that the current MPRDA does not sufficiently create the conducive environment, hence we are developing the bill. We also believe that it will balance the needs of business with the national developmental imperatives. We are also, through the bill, providing for security of tenure to existing rights to ensure that their investment is secured in the country. And if I may go to the last slide on the time frames, Chair, is that we currently looking at presenting the bill to Cabinet to seek Cabinet's approval to introduce the bill in Parliament. And once that is done, Minister will approach Parliament and request Parliament to introduce the bill to parliamentary processes. We honestly believe, Chair, it's our view that this bill is a critical step for investors to release their investment into the industry and develop the industry. Thank you, DG.
Proceed to that.
Thank you, DG. I'll quickly take the committee through the gas amendment bill. Without maybe going through this background as to when the bill was signed into law and all that, I'll just go through the objectives, which is in the main to promote efficient, effective and sustainable orderly development and construction and operation of the gas transmission, storage, distribution, liquefaction and regasification facilities. Because previously in the initial act, these were not fully provided for. But also, this is in sync with the IRP that was recently gazetted by Minister, which seeks to ensure that we provide support for all the energy sources that are outlined in the IRP. Next slide, please. And as I indicated, it's promotion in the main and providing the regulation of these facilities. But also on the second bullet, it's the inclusion of other sources of gas, which had not been included previously. Next slide, please. This slide really talks to which are those gas sources that were excluded. And these include landfill gas and unconventional gases like shale gas and CBM, which were not included. LNG, which comes with new technologies, and CNG, which also comes with new technologies and the exploitation. We are making sure that we are providing for these sources in the Act with this bill. And currently, in the Act as it is, NERSA is not adequately empowered to monitor and enforce compliance. So the bill also seeks to address that. And this is a very critical area for us, to ensure that there's both environmental compliance and health and safety compliance with the gas pipeline. Next slide. On the way forward, this amendment bill has been tabled to the cluster of DGs. We tabled it on the 18th of August. We will be tabling it to the cluster of ministers and then proceed to cabinet. While that process is unfolding, we're also consulting with DPME to ensure that we get the final certificate on the socioeconomic impact of the bill. We are hoping that by the time we get to cabinet, we would have had the final certificate. But also one last thing I think to mention is the fact that we are also in constant consultation with the state law advisor for certification to ensure that the bill doesn't have any unconstitutional provisions. Thank you, Chair. We will proceed to the next bill. Ms. Mahai will take us through the next bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. It's Lerato Makai, responsible for nuclear policy, talking. If I can have the first slide, please, before this one. I will be presenting on the draft radioactive waste management fund bill. What this bill seeks to achieve is to establish a radioactive waste management fund. This is to ensure that there is sufficient financial provision for long-term management of radioactive waste. And the funds that will be used will be utilized for different activities to ensure that there is infrastructure for waste storage and disposal. Below that, there is a number of activities that we will be focusing on. Next slide, please. With this bill, we actually are seeking to implement a policy decision that was done by government in 2005, the Radioactive Waste Management Policy and Strategy has had required for us to put in place a number of infrastructure. The first one which government has put in place is NRADI, that the members will be aware of, is one of the state entities that is managing radioactive waste at a national level. And also to ensure that the polluters pay principle is implemented. At the moment, the only waste that we have solution for is low level and intermediate level waste. So the bill seeks to focus on high level waste. And also this one, the last point, it refers to that the policy requires us to establish the fund by statute. Next slide, please. Next slide. In terms of the area of emphasis that I wanted to impact on is that we have two main waste generators, which is Eskom and Nexa, and they produce this waste from their operations through electricity generation and production. And currently that waste is now on site, which is part of the management process. So what this bill will be looking at is to ensure that for in the long term, future-wise, we'll be having those infrastructure. So we are working hand in hand with colleagues at National Treasury, because this bill attracts a money bill. So the funds will be contributed by the waste generators through the receiver of revenue, and then it will be appropriated to the fund. And as I mentioned, this mechanism will ensure that we have financial provision for the long-term management of radioactive waste. The last slide, please. So where we are, Chairperson, is that we have consulted with a number of nuclear organizations, that is Eskom, Nexa, and NRADI, which will be mainly impacted by the outcome of this bill. And we work together with Treasury, as mentioned. And on the 18th of August, we presented at the DG's cluster, and we're hoping in this month we'll be tabling at the minister's cluster as well. So our target for this financial year is to publish this bill for public consultation. Thank you, DDG. Back to you.
Thank you, Chair. The next bill is the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill, and I'll run quickly through this and then NERA. Okay, this act currently provides for the licensing of dispatch as a critical driver for efficiencies, and trading is regarded as buying or selling power, but there is a need to deal with electricity resellers, which is currently not provided for in the Act. And also to address issues relating to the definition, to ensure that all the issues that are regulated are streamlined and we fully address the different categories of trading. Can we move in the main, I'm just highlighting on the background the main issues. Previous slide, please. Okay. Now on the objectives of the bill, we are looking at amending the Electricity Regulation Amendment Act by inserting a section which outlines the procurement framework for IPPs, because that was not provided for in the earlier Act, and to align the regulator for licensing during the procurement framework, but also to give certain powers to minister relating to regulation and the different aspects of trading that I've spoken about, but also to introduce the concept of retailers in terms of that space with trading. And I must say at this point that while we are busy with this bill, we are in constant consultation with the Department of Public Enterprise in the light of the developments that are happening with regards to the restructuring of Eskom to ensure that we will be aligned at the end of the day. So just because of that, this bill might be delayed a little bit because we have to align. It will not help us to provide for trading, for example, and provide regulation aspects when the other process is lagging behind. We are going to ensure that we align those processes. But also strategically, we need to predetermine license conditions for bidders under the IPP program, which is not provided in the current Act, and strategically to ensure that there is that alignment with the IRP as published late last year. Next slide, please. Like I've spoken to the delays with this bill, it was delayed previously, and now with the discussions on restructuring of Eskom, we are also in consultation constantly with Eskom and DPE, and that process might set us back a little bit, but we are not delaying unnecessarily. We continue with drafting and consulting all the other stakeholders. We are also aware of the engagements within this committee around the ISMO bill and EMO bill. So we also are taking a note of that as we continue to draft this bill. So the plan was that we resubmit the bill to Cabinet for consultation with Cabinet and stakeholders before the end of this financial year. But as I indicated, the other developments will also have an impact on this bill. Next slide. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Thank you. Objectives of the NERA bill. With this bill, we seek to amend the National Energy Regulator Act, which, among others, provides clarity and clarify the new structure and governance of the regulator while maintaining the integrity and independence of the regulator, but also quite a bit of benchmarking with energy regulator structures on international best practice and aligned, change energy regulator structures to similar structures like Competition Commission and Tribunal for ease of management and implementation. The bill was delayed mainly due to the interdepartmental committee, which was tasked with reviewing the prioritization, alignment, and coordination of SOCs and proposals on the role of government vis-a-vis the regulatory institution to be developed. But since then, since the beginning of this financial year, we have made some strides in terms of proceeding with the finalization of the bill. And the plan again with this bill is that we're going to be taking it within this month of September. We're going to be taking it to the economic cluster and cabinet so that we do the final round of consultations and move towards finalizing the bill. I think that is my last slide. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. It's so unfortunate that it is only now on the 2nd of September that we are presenting these bills. It would have been nicer if this was during the course of August, the Women Month, so that Honorable Tonyana and Honorable Malinga could be very proud of women that are in charge in terms of driving the department in developing policies in the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DJ, and your team on the presentation. Let me go back to honorable members. What my view is, honorable members, but I can't limit again, is that it's just to look at the intentions and probably the time frames, because there are no bills yet, or there's no bill in front of us. So maybe let's avoid to discuss what is said is still going to be introduced to the committee. But it might help to understand the work and the magnitude of work that the committee might be faced with based on what has been submitted now. Because bills of parliament is what we are told, that they must always get high priority in terms of the committee work. I see now is Mr. Nxumalo back. Okay, any member wants to have a take on the presentation on the legislative framework?
Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Mailam, is there any other one?
Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Mashaule, any other one? Any other one? Two? Any other one? Three? Okay, Honorable Mailam.
Chairperson.
Honorable Malinga. Okay. Honorable Mailam.
Chairperson, thank you. And thank you to the department for the presentation. It's most welcomed. I do think that we need to get a much tighter timeline as to when these different bills are going to be tabled to Parliament and what the expected timeframes are. So I would ask that the department come back with as hard a date as they can. I realize that these things are flexible and that they're subject to cabinet and. But if we can get some hard dates, that will enable us to plan our committee program to accommodate the legislative program of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I don't think we can decide. There can be a dispute on that. Honorable Mashaule?
No, Chair. I want to align myself with Honorable Mailam. That was the first point I was going to make, that the tangible timelines would be highly, highly appreciated. I'm just looking forward to see the submissions because the bills carry important and exciting changes that we have been interacting with and will interact with. Just that one point that Honorable Mailam made without wasting time, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have only one question on radioactive waste management bill. Who will be managing the fund, Chair? Will they be establishing a new board, or what will happen, whether it will be managed by NARWIDI? Thank you very much, Chair.
I hope but the department can answer, but maybe we can only deal with that when they've presented the bill to the committee. For now, it's not even here. But the department can answer. We don't want to hold them to not to account. But for me, just quickly, CG, one issue, and I'm going to ask this question very straightforward. Part of the challenge that we're having, and I've been asking this thing, what happened to the, and I need a straight answer, what happened to the Mine Health and Safety Amendment bill? I don't see it anywhere. And we know what challenges we had, and especially now with the experience of the COVID-19, which was completely unplanned. What happened to that bill, amendment bill? Two, I think honorable members are quite clear. At least, let's have a sense. I saw the other one. It only talks about where it has gone on the gone to the DGs on the 18th of August, if I'm not mistaken. But can we get the clarity on anticipated time of reference to Parliament? What could be the anticipated time? And I think we're doing this thing because we don't want a situation where, I'm just making an example, first quarter of 2021, we've got 3 to 4 or all these proposed bills are put in front of the committee, which means the committee can't do anything except to concentrate, because that's what we are told to do, prioritize legislation. Is there a potential that the, or even in 1 year, the legislation can take even a year or more to deal with it? So I think what members, it's just to get a sense, so that we rate ourselves that there will be a time where the committee work will have to push aside and concentrate on legislation. Can continue, PG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will give over to DDG Ntokozo and also the team. And Mr. Msiza, if he wants to come in on the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Bill, will come in. But the policy is here, will be able to respond to the questions. Over to you, DDG Mwabe.
Thank you, DC. We have noted, Honorable Mailem and Honorable Mashaule, the tangible timelines. We will bring that to the committee. The question by Honorable Malinga on who will manage the fund, Ms. Mahai will respond to that, and Ms. Madia would respond to the question on the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Bill. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you, DDG. Okay, thank you. It's Lerato Mahai responding to Honorable Malinga's question about who will be managing the fund. So, Honorable Member, what we have made allowance for in the bill is that the fund will have its own governance structure. So we conducted a study looking at different options to how these funds are generally being governed. And we've realized that the best option would be the one of creating a fund that will be outside NRWADI, not within NRWADI. It will have its own board being appointed by the minister, but it's not a full-on entity where you have to appoint staff. We looked at what other countries were doing. So what is in place mostly is the governance structure of the board and the subcommittees, which will look at the cost estimations and the investments that has to be done. Thank you, DDG.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. It's Sibongile Madie. Chair, the Mine Health and Safety Bill, we are currently still processing it internally. There were some delays on the bill due to some of the issues that were raised when the bill was in the process, which we are currently trying to address. The reason why we didn't put it in the legislative program is that we didn't anticipate that we will make it in time to introduce it to Parliament within this financial year. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We would like to pause at this note. Thank you very much. Over to you.
I can see you are running away from me. At least now we know the Money, Health and Safety Amendment Bill won't be in this financial year. It seems that you are running away from the rest of the others. So we'll assume that the rest of the others will be within this financial year, which means between now and the end of March. That's what you say. As long as when we deal with the program, you will be able to note that it may not be accommodated on the fourth quarter. It means I'm being practical. It might mean then we're dealing with only one quarter, which is the quarter of 2021, which itself sometimes starts for the committee work. I don't know for the department and all the executives in general. Starts in February, not even in March on our side. But having said so, thank you very much, DG. Ari and Ayanda, I hope you are available. Can we go to the fourth quarter program? You are not dismissed, DG, with your team. You can sit and observe, because it might be of interest to you. Before we send you our friendly letter. Honorable members, we've got the program that we have presented in front of you. The first one is the one that talks about I thought I was going to respond to one part. Honorable Philip, that you raised with the department, that oversight, Ayanda and Ari, it's also supposed not just Lily Mine. Yes, we know there's a decision. There's Lily Mine, there's Optimum. That's why we had talked initially about splitting the teams. There is Northam. But also there is the issue of the solar heaters, ne? And there is the issue that is also still long standing Mosselbay Petro SA. Those are the issues that I remember we resolved on our first oversight. But also there was an issue raised by members, which I don't know whether it is possible to be accommodated. There was an issue also on illegal mining. So I think we must weigh around. That's why we had to consider whether those things can be done by one team, the committee as a whole, or we might have to split the committee into two groups, especially if we do it jointly with the NCOP Select Committee. Okay. Then there's the issue of the outstanding matter of the Euratom agreement, nuclear agreement that was given to us, which we were supposed to have done it also by August or so. It remains outstanding. This was an instruction anyway. It may not be right to say an instruction. It's what was sent to us by the Speaker's office, which we needed to round up, and we had given the department sufficient time to attend on the matter. Now you can see also that we bringing back the issue of the solar water heaters program as a presentation, because we were told that they would have undertaken this exercise, and therefore we still need a report back to ensure that there is final closure. There is the issue on the project, Montino project, which is led by CGS. Then we will then be looking at the report, the oversight report, on the 21st. And then continue, there is a black line there that makes me to be difficult to see. 27th of October, is the NAFTA turnaround strategy that they talked about, and then the adoption of the oversight report with all the issues which were going on. Then the next one is the, I think the point there is not just adherence to mine related to COVID-19, is also the point of the post-COVID-19 recovery strategy. You remember when we had a discussion, the department had said what has to be done. I know for a fact now in the sector there is a discussion on how to ensure that there is a economic recovery strategy in the sector. So we'll have to deal with that's the issue, which we will have to make a consideration whether we invite again all the stakeholders to look at the post COVID-19 recovery strategy plan. Then it will be the issue of the update again on the final, towards the finalization of the restructuring process of SERF, and the issue of the nature of the strategic fuel stock, and then there will be the issue of the gas utilization master plan. Then we will look at the issue of the electricity distribution industry, both by ESCOM and DMRE. Then is the dealing with the challenges in the diamond sector, especially with regard to state diamond trader. I can see the black spot is still there to the 17th of November. Then we'll have a briefing on permit and ownerless mines, including the rehabilitation of asbestos mines. And then this one, if we've already undertaken an oversight. The point that was raised by the department, especially DG Ngwabe, on the question of the challenges with the closure of the related ownerless mines. We will have at least had an experience of what happens in particular in regards to illegal mining. That's what we'll be dealing with probably in detail. Then the processes towards the establishment of a state-owned pharmaceutical company, the Tetrapella process. Then there will be 24th November. We are dealing with the issues that relate to the state diamond trader, the regulator, which is the precious and diamond metals regulator, and the nuclear regulator, in looking at the issues of financial sustainability. Then we will deal with the first term program for 2021, then including the outstanding reports. Note then, honorable members, the challenge that we might be having, the department have been given up. It has been given up until the 30th of November to table their annual reports, which means the BRRR process is going to be one of the huge challenges. But the proposed way of managing that is that we will have to find hopefully slots that will allow us to deal with the briefing first by the AG. The second part will be briefing by the department, and then we will have to look at then where do we fit in terms of the deliberations by the committee, as well as the preparation and the adoption of the report. That is what the honorable members were looking at this stage. Any take?
Chairperson?
Honourable
Chairperson, I don't have a problem with that, and I thank you for raising the issue of Petro SA because it is a major concern. I think that and we did agree to doing oversight at the Mossel Bay plant, but I don't think we've adequately addressed the feedstock shortage that Petro SA is encountering. And I think that it's something that, at the annual report session last year, they highlighted that by the end of this year, they would be out of feedstock. So I do think that we should address this in this term as a matter of urgency. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Ari and Ayanda, can you go up a bit or down a bit so that we can... there is a point where we say you are dealing with the strategic fuel stock. Can we go there?
Chase, I've just gone past it.
Sorry, Chase, on the 3rd of November.
Let's go to the 3rd of November.
Chairperson, if I may?
Yes.
That update by the Minister on the developments of the sale of the strategic fuel stock, that related to the sale by the SFF. It's probably going to be quite a lengthy meeting. I mean, if you think that we can fit in Petro SA as well, I think, yeah, maybe, but would it not make better sense to do it the next day on the 4th of November?
And on the gas and take out the gas utilization master plan.
Or put it in as a second item there.
Okay. But I don't think it's a problem at all, but I don't think we can have a qualm on that one. Okay, which means we'll deal with both petroleum and gas on the day. Okay. Any other matter? It seems there is consensus, honourable members, on the proposed group. Honourable members, let me say this thing: we can do all what we are doing here, and I'm not saying this with any into casting doubts on all of your leadership in Parliament. In fact, it's in recognition of what is happening and the task that they have. It must be noted, it is all subject to the program of Parliament. We try, and I will appeal to honorable members also, that as we engage with our principals and our organizations, let it be when the changes are made in the parliamentary program, take into cognizance that at times they also do affect the work of committees. For an example, we had taken this decision as early as last year to undertake an oversight. And from time to time, programs of Parliament change. And I'm not saying leadership does not have a right to do so, but it makes it more difficult. I don't think it should be allowed that committees of Parliament should finish a year without having been where it matters most. So there has to be a balance between our parliamentary work as people who are supposed to be dealing with the day-to-day activities, but also touching base directly. Otherwise, we will end up being committees of reports, not going there to see whether what is written on paper talks to what is a reality on the ground. So I'm just saying to honorable members, when these things come, unfortunately, they don't come with the option to negotiate. They come as a directive. Like we have said, the initial thought, we thought that we were going to be dealing with the PRRR during the period of August. But now, if the departments are only tabling, let's assume on the 30th of November, it actually means even the time to look at what they've tabled might hamstring members because if you do it on the 1st, you are just assuming that you will have already had the information to undertake the work. It's just that part when it comes to program. Honorable members, having said so, can we now agree that this is the report? Can I get a mover of the program for the committee? Or must I assume that we all agree? Any mover?
Chairperson, I move for the approval and adoption of this program with the addition that Honorable Malem has done.
Okay, second?
A second, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Member, can we now go? Yesterday, we engaged on the report. We have tried our level best to send the report to members. The component of the Democratic Alliance in the I'm using this thing from a chairperson's point of view, stated that they reserve their rights that to submit a minority report to Parliament. I've not dealt with the issue of that nature before, so I'm sure we can get guidance. But I tried to look at what do the rules of Parliament say, but I think we will deal with that issue as and when we are on it. Can we see the flag, the proposed report of the committee?
I'll flag it now, too.
Yeah. Okay, there is a report, honorable members. First, it gives the background of the bill, where it comes from, that it was introduced and referred to the Mineral Resources and Energy for consideration. The objects of the report are stated financially viable to ensure that it is financial viability and a management system based on efficiency to act as a trader on electricity line through in line with government policy, to prepare appropriate input into the planning of electricity supply and transmission planning, that it is responsible for the establishment, practice, and maintenance of the integrated power system, sources of efficient dispatch within the integrated power system, and I don't jumper. You are jumping. And then to provide matters that are related to electricity, therefore. There too. And yes, the bill was in compliance with the measures of the introduction of and the consideration of a private member's bill. The committee provided a reasonable notice to the member who introduced the bill, which was Honorable Mazoni, to brief. Can we use Honorable instead of Miss? I'm just thinking of that. I feel it's more better when we all honorable members until we do things in an unhonorable manner. So she is Honorable Mazoni. To brief the committee on December 3rd, 2019, on the contents of the introduced bill, The presentation obviously stated that the Independent Electricity Management Operators Bill builds on the foundations of the ISMO Bill, which was an executive bill introduced by 2012. And then it goes on to state what was it rely on two crucial aspects, the independence generation and distribution, a separated electricity management focus with separate entities governing the buying and selling of electricity that does not have a state, of which government does not have a state in production. Okay, then on 18 February, I don't know, this black spot is not, it doesn't want to go, Ari. I don't know if it's a result of load shedding. On February,
say again, 18,
I'm saying there's this black spot that does not move in the middle of your page. I don't know whether it's a result of load shedding.
I don't doubt it. Is other members experiencing the same thing, Chair?
I don't know. For me, there is. But no, it's fine now. It's just below your page on my side. Then it's on February 18, 2020, the committee was briefed by the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy as a response to the bill. The department's view on the bill was that it establishes an independent electricity market operator as a private company. And according to them, the bill creates a private company to execute a public function. According to the department, the bill proposes to recover operational costs from tariffs, fees, and charges to customers. That the bill provides for the EMO to choose customers for special tariffs, include and exclude at its discretion. The department further pointed out that the EMO seeks to treat municipalities differently, i.e. metros vis-a-vis other municipalities, and that it only refers to metros as customers to EMO, and that it seeks to take over control of distribution and reticulation from municipalities. Then go up. Don't want to say next page. Go up. Yes. So in March this year, the committee had deliberations on the briefing received on 3rd December and 18 February. During the discussion, a number of members highlighted that the restructuring of ESCOM is currently underway and that space should be provided for this process to unfold. They further raised the concerns and objected to the notion of private shareholders in the proposed bill. That's an error there. It can't be in the proposed bill. And questioned as to why government would want to put state-owned assets in the hands of the private sector. Several members also pointed out that as the Ofcom roadmap provides for the legal separation of transmission from generation and distribution, it does not provide for a private company. According to numerous members, it is not within the interest of the people of South Africa for the grid to be in private hands. On 25th, the Minister of Public Enterprise, 4 August, Honorable Pravin Gordhan with the Department of Public Enterprises briefed a joint committee of both Mineral Resources and Energy and with Public Enterprise. And on its response to the bill, the following issues were raised. According to the minister, there is inconsistency in the bill in the bill between private and public ownership. The original ISMO bill was premised on the ISMO being a state-owned company, whereas EMO took this model and tried to superimpose private ownership structure. The private ownership model of EMO or independent transmission operator is not therefore supported. Berman pointed out that a fundamental difference in the EMO model is the provision that state will not be permitted to be a shareholder in the grid. The minister, with some several members, emphasized that the EMO is envisaged as a 100% privately owned company. The DPE does not support the proposal that the state have no shareholding in the EMO and proposes the entity is fully state-owned, that the entity be fully state-owned. The statement made by EMO made that the EMO is compatible with World Bank advice, which advocates that no market participant would be involved in the grid operator. The minister pointed out that best practice globally is for the state to retain 100% ownership of the grid operator, as this is regarded as a strategic asset. According to the minister, the ESCOM roadmap gives the same results as the EMO bill, but the transmission component remains in the hands of the state as an important and strategic asset, while on the generation side, there is a diversity that has already started. The department pointed out that the government has started a process to restructure the industry, and ESCOM, as outlined by the DPE special paper on ESCOM, consultations between government department, that is DPE, DMRE, and NT, which is National Treasury, have ensued to ensure that there is alignment on the process required to restructure the industry post the ESCOM unbundling. On 1st September 2020, the committee further discussed the deliberations on the matter of the bill. During the deliberation, the committee considered the merits of the bill. After deliberations on the subject matter, the committee concluded that, one, can you go up? Yes. ESCOM generates transmission and distribution approximately 95% of the electricity used in South Africa. Because of the monopoly, some equate ESCOM to be playing dual roles, that of referee and a player. EMO seeks to break this monopoly. As an independent private company, EMO aims to introduce competition at the electricity generation, wherein ESCOM would compete with other electricity generators in terms of selling and buying electricity. The objective of the EMO bill are to provide for the establishment of EMO as a public-private partnership entity which will provide an independent system operation to ensure safe, secure, and efficient operation of the integrated power system and the trading of electricity at wholesale level, and to allow metropolitan municipalities to purchase electricity from IPPs, as well as provide for matters connected therein. The bill seeks to break ESCOM into two separate entities, a generation entity in an effort to break ESCOM's monopoly on the generation and transmission distribution entity. The aim is to privatize the generation entity in an effort to break ESCOM's monopoly on the production of energy. Let's go up. Let's go up. In October 2019, the Minister of Public Enterprises, Prithvi Godhan, submitted the roadmap for Eskom in an effort in a reformed electricity supply industry. Special paper to Parliament. The paper outlined the steps required to restructure Eskom, South Africa's largest electricity utility. The paper proposes a transmission entity that is 100% Eskom owned and fully regulated. It is envisioned that the transmission entity will buy power from different power generators. Consideration is being given to the creation of two or three generation subsidiaries to introduce intercompany competition and drive efficiencies in generation. With respect to distribution, a distribution entity under Eskom Holdings will be formed and will be authorized to buy from the transmission entity, licensed municipal generators and embedded generation. The committee therefore agreed that we need to give government the opportunity to execute and implement these reform processes as outlined in the Eskom roadmap. Eskom roadmap, amongst others, includes the restructuring of Eskom into Eskom Holdings with three new subsidiaries: generation, transmission, and distribution. Formation of transmission entity under Eskom Holdings to foster a competitive market and encourage the use of diverse sources of energy. Consideration to create two or more generation subsidiaries to introduce intra-company competition, allow for Eskom participation in renewable generation. The committee is also of the view that the creation of private company to execute a public function is problematic. The transmission function and operation is a natural state-owned monopoly to ensure fair, equitable, and transparent exercise. The EMO builds on the foundation laid down by the independent system and market operators, that is ISMO, which was an executive bill introduced in 2012. However, the original ISMO bill was premised on ISMO being a state-owned entity, whereas EMO took this model and tried to impose a private ownership structure. Another area of concern to the committee is the explicit exclusion of the state as a shareholder. The bill does not explicitly reflect on how the current Eskom debt will be handled, as the debt was raised at holding level, including transmission assets in the balance sheet. Also, the transfer of state assets and resources to a private company without merit or compensation is not supported. With regards to municipality, the committee would like to point out that the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy has invited comments to the amendment of the electricity regulation on new generation capacity in order to allow the municipalities that are in good financial standing to develop or procure their own power generation from the independent power producers. This is in keeping with the President's 2020 SONA speech, where he announced that the government would put measures in place to enable municipalities in good financial standing to develop or procure their own power generation from IPPs. It should be also highlighted and pointed out that government is working on addressing a faster move towards the participation of private sector in generation. The committee, having considered the desirability of the subject matter of the bill in terms of the measures from the introduction and the consideration of a private member's bill, reports that it has rejected the bill. That's the report that has to be considered. I'm ending there, honorable members. Then I must take a hand from you. Unfortunately, though, we've got only 10 minutes left. Anything, honorable members?
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes, honorable Mashaule.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to welcome the report, and I want to draw your attention to point number 9, bullet number 1. It reads that after deliberations on the subject matter of the bill, the committee concluded that, and the operative word will be concluded, ESCOM generates, transmits, and distributes approximately 95% of electricity used in South Africa. Because of this monopoly, some equate, those two words are operative as well, some equate ESCOM to be playing dual roles, that of a referee and a player. EMO seeks to break this monopoly as an independent private company. EMO aims to introduce competition at the electricity generation level, wherein ESCOM will compete with the electricity generators in terms of selling and buying electricity. That paragraph does not express what, after saying those things by some, what the committee eventually agreed. And what the committee did was to align itself with what was presented by the Minister of Public Enterprise, that we emphasized that the best practice globally is for the state to retain 100% ownership of the grid operator, as this is regarded as a strategic asset. Now, the paragraph as it is, Chair?
I'm listening.
The paragraph as it is, it reflects as if we have a problem with the monopoly of ESCOM, of which we don't have. We accept and promote the monopoly by ESCOM, as it is not in conflict with international best practice. So I would request that point, Chair, is corrected. The second point I want to raise, Chair, is that when the documents were distributed, I noticed that there is a minority report that was circulated, and we read it. The first one, I did not read the second one because it came at 8:51, which is 9 minutes before the meeting. But I want to draw your attention, Chair, to Rule 166, Section 4, Subsection A, B, Roman figure 1 and 2. And it reads as follows, Chair. A committee may not submit a minority report, an operative word there being report. B, if a report is not a unanimous report like this one, it must specify in which respect there was not consensus. And two, in addition to the views representative of the majority in the committee, express any views of a minority in the committee. Now, Chair, we note the report, what is supposed to be views, but termed reports, because it's not recognized legally according to the rules to be a report. You may not support a report submit a minority report, you can support the views of the minority perspective. Now, the point I'm saying, Chair, is that one, we note that there is a minority view. It's not for us as a committee to deal with. It will accompany the report as we are submitting one report and minority views. So I just wanted, Chair, to be clear, because you earlier on made the point that you have not dealt with the issue. So I just thought, let's clarify that issue so that we know how we move forward. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Mylam.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I'd like to thank Honorable Mafuare for raising Rule 166, Subsection 4. Chairperson, you will note that in the second version, which I sent to the committee and I sent it to Ayanda to distribute, I have changed the title from Minority Report to Minority View, and I corrected some typos. I did not change any of the content. I just corrected a few typos. But the heading has changed to Minority View in order to comply with the requirements of Rule 166, Subsection 4. Chairperson, there were a number of procedural irregularities in this process, particularly with regard to, and let me just call it up here, give me one second, Rule 286 of the National Assembly Rules. Sorry, I'm just getting there on my rules here. And here I refer to 286 sub-rule 3, which says that a committee to which a bill introduced by an assembly member in his or her individual capacity has been referred must provide reasonable notice to the person in charge of the bill before it considers the bill. Chairperson, we considered the bill yesterday. No notice was provided to Honorable Mazzoni, and therefore this committee is delinquent in its compliance with the rules of Parliament. And it is for that reason that I have outlined these procedural flaws in my minority view, which, as Honorable Mashwale says, should be attached to the longer committee report. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson.
Chair.
Chairperson.
Hello.
Chairperson.
Yeah, hello.
Chairperson.
My hand is also up, Chair.
I have a problem from my side too.
Can we assist,
What's
Chair?
Happening?
Can I come in before my whip? Chairperson, the flaws that the Honorable Mylam is raising, he should have raised it yesterday before we deliberated on the bill. It can't come now as we are, the staff is flighting the report, and it comes after they have sent their own minority.
Point of order, Chair.
That's not right.
Point of order.
I humble Lala Wena.
What's the order?
Point of order. First of all, I'd ask that you protect me from Honorable Malinga, who just told me to go away, and I don't appreciate that. Chairperson, my point of order is this. A breach of the rules can be highlighted at any point during the discussion of that item. I bring it to the attention of this committee that there was a breach of the rules. That is what I'm doing now. I can do that at any point in terms of the rules of Parliament, and I'm doing so now. And Honorable Malinga, sorry,
Chair. I can rule on the order. Now, I'm saying, Honorable Malinga,
I raised my hand.
Yes, I'll come to you, Honorable Mashaule.
Chairperson, it is not for me. It is not for me to chair this meeting. It's not for me to determine.
I'm trying to take your point of order, Honorable Mylam. I'm trying to help you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So it's not for me to determine whether or not the rules have been complied with. All I can do is bring a breach of the rules to the attention of the chairperson or to the attention of the National Assembly Speaker or Chair of Chairs. And so that is what I have done in my minority view, and which I'm bringing to your attention. And so Honorable Malinga is completely out of order to say that I should have done so yesterday.
Can I rule on the order first? Unfortunately, it is 12 o'clock now, 1 minute past 12. I don't know for how long do we have time, Ayanda and Ari. Ayanda and Ari?
Sorry, Jay, I also had time. No, but it's fine. We can continue for about 20 minutes, Jay.
10 to 20 minutes, okay. Honorable member, we are dealing, my problem is that I got cut off, or let me say disappeared with network. I didn't get the clause. Then I wanted first to deal with the clause that Honorable Mailam is dealing with. The second part is that any member, all members reserve their right in the objection on what they are objecting on. We must then respond on the objection. And therefore, yes, Honorable Mailam, you're correct. You've got a right to raise your issues, and you've got a right to respond on the issues that you are raising, including the procedure. But if you can tell me, I'll come to you, Honorable Mashaula and Honorable Malinga. If you can, which clause were you quoting when you said the member has not been given an opportunity in 286?
Chairperson, it's Rule 286,
yes.
Sub-Rule 3, and it reads as follows.
Yes.
A committee to which a bill introduced by an Assembly member in his or her individual capacity has been referred must provide reasonable notice to the person in charge of the bill before it considers the bill. As I said, we considered the bill yesterday.
No, I can give you an answer, but you are correct to give your own interpretation. It says before considers the bill. And the committee, before it could do anything, the first person it considered, was Honorable Mazoni. That's what it did. But it is subject to your own interpretation. That's my interpretation. That's why, that's what gives them the highest price. It doesn't say before it deliberates.
On the report.
Please. It doesn't say before it deliberates. That's why if you look at it, where it uses deliberating, it is already on the basis that it would have taken into consideration. These are the people that it has to take. So I allow you, if you feel that was a procedure, I think it will be unfair even to Honorable Mazoni to say she was never invited by the committee before it considered the bill. The mere fact that the bill is referred to the committee, it is sent to the committee for consideration. And the committee, before it could consider the bill, it says priority number one is the member who introduced the, who has made the bill. Let's give her a chance or him a chance. And in this case, it's her, and that's what the committee did. But we can leave that for that consideration. The second part, I don't know. I want to see the points that my main worry, Honorable Mailam, I would have taken a different view, and it's up to you. I don't want to lie. The big question is, if there is a minority view, does that suggest that minority view must be subjected to a decision of the committee? What if the committee does not agree with even the context that there is a difference between what that view is raising? Let's take an example. We will then have to sit down and say, in what you are raising, where is the difference? Are the issues that you are raising inconsistent with what the committee is raising? I.e., the committee says before we can make any other matter, there is an let's agree there is a disagreement. It says we must then be able to be clear on desirability. My understanding is that the minority view would say it is desirable. The majority view says it is undesirable. The second part is that we may then have to ask a question. Do we agree that if this bill does not talk to the roadmap of ESCOM and does not talk to what the department proposes? So my view is that what I fear is that this rule does not say those minority views must be just thrown into the committee. And the committee, what happens if the committee discusses and makes a view on those minority views? Not report, I agree. Maybe you can get assistance there that don't even entertain what is written by the minority as minority views. Or does it suggest, and I want to raise this thing because law is difficult, does it suggest that the majority will be the one that will determine what are the majority views that it needs to recognize? Well, that's the manner for me that is being done. But let me take then Honorable Mashaule and then Honorable Malinga.
Thank you very much. To say, Chair, the committee has a report that it will submit to the National Assembly or to the Speaker. There is a minority view, which I did not understand why it circulated to us, because it has nothing to do with the committee. It has to do with the minority view, whoever is a minority and wants to submit their views. They accompany the report. It's not for us to deliberate on, because it's not the views we hold. That's why we have the main report constituted by our own views. So we can't enter into a minority view because it's not ours. Immediately we enter, we are suggesting that we own the majority view, or we want to be part of the minority view. And from where I'm sitting, the committee can't go into a minority view while it has its own report that it will be submitting. So I don't understand why we are even discussing it. Honorable Malem has an opportunity to write. He wrote. It's going to be accompanying the report. That is it. We don't have to deliberate. It's not ours. It can't be ours. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Malinga.
Chairperson, my whip has covered me. Thank you.
Can I get back? And so we say if that is the case, I think it's okay. Honorable Ari?
Chairperson?
Let me deal with the procedure issue first, because that's why these the committee staff are here. Is it correct that in terms of the rules, we just finalize the report of the committee and then it also attach the recognizes, let's say put it like that, recognizes that there is a minority view and it is enclosed.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Malam.
Chairperson, I'm happy with that approach. I certainly did not expect to debate the minority view. I tabled it before the committee as an appropriate way of including it in the committee report. And so that is why I have followed that procedure. It is certainly not something that I was expecting to debate or discuss or pull apart or get approval on or anything like that.
Okay, I'm asking now, maybe first, before I go that, is that the correct route according to your knowledge, Ari?
That is fine, Chair. That can be done.
Okay, let's do it like this then, so that we are procedural. Those who support the report as presented by the chairperson, now I'm saying it, is there any move of the report?
Chair, I move for the report.
Is there any seconder?
I do second the report with the amendment that was previously made by Honorable Mahlaule on that first paragraph.
Okay. Any objection?
The Democratic Alliance objects.
And? You know, I'm trying to help you, Honorable Mailan.
Sorry, Chair, I said the Democratic Alliance objects.
Because, yes, I'm saying I'm trying to help you because the report is, like Honorable Mahlaule said, the report is as it is. The decision of the committee will be that the report was adopted, and I don't want to assume that. Let's just assume that there is an objection from Honorable Mailam, so that we don't make it a political matter. So there's an objection because when we go for a vote, if we decide to vote for the report, we must vote on the report on the basis that there is a need to vote.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Mailam.
I rephrase that then. I object to the report and I request that the minority view be included.
Okay. As per the rule
166 sub rule 4.
Okay.
Chairperson, can I check something?
Yes.
Whether are we in order if we allow Honorable Mailam to say that he objects to the report but wishes that the minority view be covered? Because I think the issue of the minority view has long been closed, that no. We must agree as a committee with the report, but furthermore add the minority view on the report when we submit it to the House. I thought that that was how we are agreeing in the committee, unless if I'm not sure.
No, my interpretation is that when there is an objection to the report, it's that it objects on the report and therefore they have a separate, different views to what is contained in the report, which is what is said now. The reason is that the minority view is on the basis of the number. That's why I'm saying then it means before we go to the next thing to determine, let me then go back. I assume then he's saying from the DA, it means there are two members from the DA. Let me go to the ANC. ANC is supposed to have six, and how are you voting?
Chair, we can't assume that there are two in the DA. We have not had...
I'm saying in the House, when the DA said the DA is objecting, and the DA has got two, except if Honorable Phillips is not in the meeting. The procedure, remember, says the parties and the whips of parties must state how are they voting on the matter. So the
Sorry, Chair, Ms. Phillips would like to speak.
Yes, Honorable Phillips.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to confirm that I am in the House and that I support my colleague, Honorable Kevin Marlam's view. Thank you.
Okay, that's what I was trying to do. ANC?
Chairperson, I don't know whether I must speak on behalf of the ANC or everybody will speak one by one, but we are in support of the report, and we're all in the House.
Yes, that's right. Remember, through the virtual meeting now, it is allowed on the rules to parties to vote on an item as parties.
We're all in the House. We support the report.
Okay. EFF? Ramushanyan?
Yes, Chair. We abstain, Chair.
You abstain?
Yes.
Okay. Babu, the IFP is not in. ATM is not in. I don't know who else.
That's all, Chair, because PAC is their alternate.
Alternate, okay. Honourable members, then the vote is 8-6-2 against, 2 against, with the addition of the minority views. Then the AFF is abstaining, 1 abstention. I think honourable members, having said so, we will try our level best to follow the due procedures, enjoy the matter, the meeting stands adjourned, enjoy your few days off and constituency period. We wish to see you again. Please stay safe. The virus is still on. Hope to see you again in October. Is there any announcement, Ms. Boss or Mr. Boss, you want to make? Yes.
Yeah, okay, sorry, maybe before her.
Oh, is that Mr. Langa? Honorable Langa.
That's correct, Chairperson. When you were pronouncing EFF, I didn't hear you properly. EFF is EFF. We do not have double E. It's just EFF. Thank you, Chairperson.
Hi, Anzangi, Shogota, Gasiba, Metalo. Okay.
Mhlambe Chair, ma uyisho ngesiZulu uzothi EFF.
Okay. Any announcement, Mr. Kotze or Ms. Boss?
Just with regard to the oversight visit, say, we'll submit soonest, so members will be informed once we get the approvals from the House Chair, if approved, Chair. So we'll inform members soonest.
Okay. Honorable members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. I'm back.
Bye-bye.